Do you want to improve business efficiency and take control of your finances? With Sage Accounting, you can. Our solutions are easy to set up, intuitive, and accompanied by unrivaled support from our experts. Whether you're a startup or a growing business, there's a solution for you. Sage, accounting for your business journey. For more information or to book a software demo, visit sage.co.uk/journey.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, leave it in the ring.
Welcome back to another edition of Leave the Ring Radio. This is your boy Dave Duenas. I'm back. I want to thank everybody that's been reaching out to me, sending me emails, hitting me up on Twitter, all the social media spots. When am I going to return? When is the Leaving the Ring coming back? So I apologize. I went on my hiatus. I had to take care of a bunch of stuff and needed a break. So I'm back, and of course we got to play catch up with everything in boxing at this moment because we have a lot to cover. You know, if you follow me on Twitter, you can see that I still commentate when there are live fights or when things have happened after. You'll hear my opinion, what's going on in the fight world. So let's just kind of go back what's been going on here, okay? Obviously, one of the big talks was with Mikey Garcia moving up to 140 on the 7th of 29th to face Adrian the Problem Broner. Now, what we saw with Mikey Garcia is he is that classic boxer. You know, I think the big question that most folks had, because, I mean, it was a phenomenal performance. Let's just give it that there. You know, he shut out Adrian Broner, who, you know, we weren't really quite sure if he was going to make 140 or whatever the case was with the guy, okay? He's been surrounded with a lot of problems. But he showed up in fit. But the one question I had on Twitter was, okay, did he concentrate solely on making the weight and not concentrate on having a strategic plan into trying to defeat Mikey Garcia? And it turned out to be, it was, you know, a little bit of both. But Mikey is just on point. One thing I liked about what Mikey does, and even in lower weights, he sets traps. He also does a lot of feints, something that's, you know, it's almost like a lost art in boxing. You know, he tries to give you some type of movement to see how you're going to react to it. And once he kind of, downloads it in his head and sees what you do, then he kind of capitalizes or adjusts to it. And that's one thing that Adrian Broner just couldn't seem to figure out, get past with Mikey Garcia, okay? Mikey was able to set those traps, and it just kind of just rolled over, and that's what made the fight a little bit easier for him, okay? Broner is just still a guy that's a one-punch, fighter now. He's become the modern Sugar Shane Mosley, in my opinion, you know? Not to say that Adrian Broner can't be competitive at 147 with some B-level guys and stuff, you know? But at this point right now, you can honestly say Adrian Broner is a gatekeeper for anybody else out there stuff, you know. So Mikey Garcia, 140. The only big question is, didn't look like he carried that much power, but he's very precise. And when you're precise like that and you're able to throw combinations and still do a lot of feint and not tire out, you're going to be a problem for anybody at 140 division. Even I'm not sure. I don't think he should flirt with 147. Let's just be honest. I don't want to see that happen. Okay, but this past weekend, Terrence Crawford unifies the welterweight title, okay, with Indigo. And the one thing that a lot of people thought, Indigo, taller guy, rangy dude, fought the right way to gain his titles. This wasn't something that was just given to him. He worked his way to that point. He worked his way to get to be in position to fight Terrence Crawford on ESPN on Saturday. And Crawford delivered. He delivered in front of his fans. He delivered on ESPN. He delivered on a big mass scale of an audience that we're going to tune in and watch it. And I got to say, 140, he's very dominant. He you know, he just looks like every bit of a champion that's supposed to go out there and do his job, okay? And he went out there and he you know, he was explosive. He knew how to, you know, throwing some massive and some really hard body shots. So I was impressed. I think there's no way around it saying that this guy is very impressive. He's got the look. He's got the action of a star. And that's something that we want, you know, at the welterweight division, okay? So where does that leave him at with top rank? Well, you know, he could definitely move up. And if he moves up to the welterweight division, well, obviously most of the welterweight guys are in the Al Haymon world, okay? So that'd be the PBC world. So does he start calling these guys out? You know, I don't know. I don't think Bob's going to want him to do any of that because, if anything, Bob is building a brand with Terrence Crawford. So it's really, if you look at the way Crawford has kind of generated his fans, it's out of his home base. And that's kind of generally the way you're supposed to build a fighter. You know, I'm talking maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago, that was one of our biggest complaints here on Leaving the Ring, was that promoters were taking away fighters out of a town that they had kind of established name and should have kind of set on that a little bit more and help them build that brand before trying to move them into Vegas. Promoters were just automatically making the big move by getting package deals, TV package deals, and moving their fighters to Vegas. And it just, you kind of saw that it diluted these fighters' chances of becoming a star. You know, it was more of a gamble just moving them that fast. So with Terrence Crawford, to me, that was just, it's a real traditional way of building a fighter, getting his fan base, and you could see it. There was a lot of, it was a lot of excitement. So the crowd was into it. So if you're watching it, you got into watching Terrence Crawford as well. PBC, not so much. You know, they have fights like, for instance, Mikey Garcia and Adrian Broner. You know, it was held in Brooklyn, where it should have been in Southern California. Whatever the case is, we've kind of seen this weird things. You know, Robert Guerrero going, you know, to the East Coast when he's a West Coast fighter. Just a lot of stuff doesn't make sense in the way they trying to build their brand. Okay, so. In terms of who's the bigger popular name at the moment, so you can argue that, you know, Danny Garcia or Keith Thurman, you know, they have a fan base because they've been on PBC, they've been on TV a bit more. But crowd-wise, where people are going to show up to the arena or stadium, you got to go with Crawford. And Top Rank has kind of done their homework and their job in building their fighter. So that's why I kind of sit back. If you saw my tweet on Twitter, I said, you know, Terrence Crawford, he decides to make the 147th move. He, in my opinion, doesn't need to call out any of the PBC fighters. It doesn't look like that needs to be his route. It's probably going to have to be, you know, the PBC guys. They're going to have to start calling out Terrence Crawford because it looks like he has the heavier fan base than either one of those, any of the guys in the PBC world at the moment. Okay. Mikey Garcia, though, by far, has a cult following, has a big Southern California following, has a big Mexican following, and it's proven. Why? Because the guy comes out and he had his layoff, he had his scuffle with Top Rank in lawsuits, but comes back and you can see he hasn't really missed a beat. Yeah, you can say, oh, you know, Adrian Broner didn't look that great last time out. He fought 147 against Adrian Gornados. You know, he lost before that. He just hasn't been the problem, okay? He's been more of a problem for himself. But the way Mikey Garcia shut him out made it really a very dominant performance. It leaves the imagination of what he could do at 140. Like I said, the big question, though, is the power. Where's the power? Could he humble anybody else that's going to come forward, a big, strong 140-pounder, is yet to be seen. Now, I know a lot of folks already are saying, hey, I want to see Mikey Garcia and Terrence Crawford. At this moment, based on both of their performances, it'd be a very competitive, but I got to lean with Crawford. I think the power there for 140 and how comfortable he is, he's very explosive. He's going to be really tough to beat. Really, really, really tough to beat. The test really for him is going to be 147. How well will he react to the bigger guys at 147? If it was to step in with any of the PBC guys, Keith Thurman obviously is a big puncher and can move and can box. You know, sometimes though he's kind of like, what are you doing? But it's you can't take away his accomplishments. And he's been hit by some solid guys as well. So that there is, it to me, is the big test for Terrence Crawford as well as Mikey Garcia. If he was to decide to go after Terrence Crawford at 140, that is the big test for Mikey Garcia. And I think all the favors would go with Terrence Crawford. I think either against Mikey Garcia or Keith Thurman. That's if the PBC and Top Rank want to play along with each other in the playground, in the boxing promotion. So that there, okay. So I hope that happens. Now I'll tell you what fight that I've been looking at. I'm really excited about. If it does happen, is obviously December 9th. That's the talks of this fight happening. It's going to be Guillermo Rigondeaux versus Vasily Lomachenko. You got to give Rigondeaux credit, even though you know the Twitter mob can sometimes be very brutal against Rigo. Even fight fans, you know, call him boring. At times he can be very boring. He's very strategic. He's very too overly patient, you know. But he's got an eraser with his punches in both hands. Okay. And we saw what happened with Flores. Yeah, you know, some folks are going to, you know, upset about it. It was hit, you know, he hit after the bell. But if you look at it at the replay, they both were landing punches and they were both throwing after the bell. Okay. But going back, you cannot take away Rigondeaux boxing skills. You know, this guy's got phenomenal defense. He's got good offense. And he hits like a mule. So let's not forget, Nonito Donaire was the bigger guy. And Nonito at the time was considered by many media, many fans as the pound-for-pound best, the next Manny Pacquiao in the boxing world, okay? And I think myself and a few other folks were very critical of Nonito Donaire because, to me, he became more of an actor in the sport. He didn't seem like he was really an athlete anymore. He kind of just, you know, was kind of just soaking in all the fame and kind of forgetting that he was a fighter. And him getting in with Rigondeaux, to me, that was going to be the demise of him of realizing that, you know, you got to be a fighter full time. There is no such thing as part time fighters in the boxing hurt business. Okay. And Rigondeaux went out there and we saw how he dissected him. He chopped him up and he gave Donaire a pretty good beating to, in my opinion, where Donaire was never the same after that. Okay. So Vasily Lomachenko, great footwork. They call him the Matrix. There's a reason why he's very hard to hit. From the get-go, he kind of shuts down, you know, the top 10 guys. He shuts them down. You know, it's very hard to argue that he's not a skillful person. You know, the thing is, though, is that he is beating guys that are coming off loss. He is beating guys that he's supposed to out showboat and beat. Okay? So him getting Rigondeaux, which I give Rigondeaux credit for kind of taunting him on Twitter. If you don't follow him, follow him. I mean, he really worked to try to get this fight. And I think, you know, the thing that most folks are not giving Rigondeaux the credit is that he does kind of try to chase for the best fights available out there. Whether or not it's in his favor, whether or not, you know, he doesn't generate enough for somebody to take the risk. The point is that he's a fighter and he's trying to get the fights out there. Vasily Lomachenko is the same thing. There's two guys that come from prestige amateur backgrounds, okay? And they're right from the get-go, right from the start of their career in the pro ranks, they start off by wanting to fight the best and get titles right away. So you got to give both of these guys credit. You know, I like both guys' styles. I think the only thing that would probably concern me with Rigondeaux on December 9th is that he is jumping up in weight, okay? And if you watch Rigondeaux, he's sometimes, like I said, a little overly patient with his punches. He's almost like a perfection. He has to throw the right punches every single time. The right combinations have to be thrown every single time. And that sometimes can turn off a fight fan. Lomachenko, he sometimes plays with his food too much. that turns off fight fans. It turns me off. It turns me off when Rigondeaux takes too long. You know, where we know these guys are better than the oppositions that they're facing, that sometimes it just takes too long, okay? There's too much dialogue where we want the action. You know what I mean? We don't go see Rambo or any of these other flicks that are supposed to have a lot of action for the dialogue, okay? We don't want to hear a whole bunch of crap and all that, you know? A huge storyline, a whole huge buildup, and then there's only one sequence of action. That's not why we go to see this. We want to see action from the get-go, okay? So going back with that, what I was saying is my only concern with Rigondeaux is because he can be overly precise, that when you move up in weight, and we know that he's got that eraser in the lower weight, 122, we know that he can turn a fight around with one punch. We know that he can stop a guy with one punch because we've seen it. But when you move up in weight, that's going to be the question. You're going to be fighting a bigger guy and a mobile guy and a guy that knows how to slip punches, okay? So when you think of guys that have moved up in weight and that are kind of snipers the way Rigondeaux is, you think, well, they're not that successful because that eraser, that power, may not be enough to humble the bigger guy. So the bigger guy can, you know, overwhelm you with his punches and not be too concerned with what's coming at him. So Rigondeaux would have to do kind of a similar move of what Manny Pacquiao did with his career, where Manny was a monstrous puncher at 126, even going to 130 and 135, made a short run at 140. We saw what he did to Ricky Hand, but as soon as he went to 147, the volume of combinations that Manny would throw, that would puzzle his opponent and it would humble him, because they weren't like eraser punches, but they were, you know, enough to make you, enough for you to feel the punches, where you got worry about stepping in a little, you know, trying to rush in right away. Rigondeaux's going to have to do that with Lomachenko. He's probably going to have to get out of a character a little bit. And that's something I think that's going to be very difficult for Rigondeaux, you know, because when you fought a certain way for so long, it's really hard to up the gear, to change your character in the ring. Okay, so that's something there that I think we have to keep an eye out for Rigondeaux. If the fight, I hope it does, because it obviously would shut up, the fan base of who would win this fight. And it's still a good fight, even though he's moving up. It's still a good fight, and I think it's a necessary fight. It's a fight that's always going to be, it's a hangover for Lomachenko. You know, fans are going to always go, oh, well, you didn't face this guy, blah, blah, blah. And obviously his manager with his tweets back, his interaction with Rigondeaux, to me, it didn't go over well, in my opinion. And it did kind of seem kind of fishy, where you're telling the guy, hey, we'll jump up and wait and we'll fight you. And then when the guy calls him out on it, he's like, oh, well, wait a minute, you need to talk to the promoter. Now that they're talking about making it happen, let's see it happen, which shuts everybody up. And the best way to end an argument, well, is to meet in the ring, right? So there you go with that. Okay, so... God, I guess we got to talk a little bit about this fight here. You know, I still get a lot of emails about this, and I don't understand why. I put this a while back on Twitter, and there was, you know, a couple of fight fans kind of trying to argue with me with this point about Paul Malignaggi. Because I threw out there, what was the point of Paul Malignaggi being part of the, you know, Conor McGregor sparring team? To me, it seemed like a ploy of just trying to generate some interest to boxing fans that really were not even interested in. I even told in a conversation with Gabriel Montoya, you know, I even told him, I said, don't be surprised if they show something of Paulie getting battered or even dropped, okay? Because they're gonna try to generate more tickets for this, because to me it's just a big dud. It's a big con fight for you know, if you're a hardcore fight fan, you know this. Now going back with Paulie, you know, I answered a lot of people that were hitting me back on social media and through our Leaving the Ring email, saying that, you know, telling me that Paulie was good because, you know, he does bring boxing knowledge. Now, guys, I got to tell you this, okay? Because you commentate a fight, let's be clear about this. Because you can commentate a fight doesn't necessarily mean you can give that person direction of how to implicate what you're saying. That is completely different. You know, all of us, I think we can sit there and, you know, kind of shed some type of commentary when a fight is happening, but to sit there and say and to show the fighter where to place your feet, or show them the timing, or how to, you know, do these certain feints and all this other stuff. It's completely different. Ask Teddy Atlas. I mean, he had all the answers of how to beat Manny Pacquiao, but when the time came, the firefighter never showed up to put out the fire. So this whole mirage that, oh, he's a good talker and he's got good knowledge and he can commentate, it still does not transcend of him showing a fighter how to implicate what you're talking about. That is completely, completely different. You can go and talk to a lot of trainers. You can go and talk to fighters and they can tell you the same. I know trainers that couldn't, you know, commentate a fight. You know, they just can't seem to get the words out. You know, they can think it, but they can't get it out of their mouth fast enough so that it can, you know, relay to the audience that's tuned in. Fighters as well, you know, they know how to throw a punch and they know how, you know, how to move their body to throw that punch. But it's very hard to try to teach that person how to do those things. Very hard to teach them how to be a counterpuncher. You know, saying it and doing it and showing that to an individual is completely different. And that's why I said it made no sense to have Paulie Malignaggi in there. It was just a gimmick. And that's what I wanted to point out. And it's still a gimmick, okay? What's going to happen on Saturday night on August 26th between Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather? Well, you're just going to have a spectacle of a guy running around the ring trying to catch the other dude, which I think it's going to be Floyd chasing Conor McGregor. I don't think it's going to be a whole lot of Conor chasing Floyd, okay? Why? Because he's going to quickly find out after two or three rounds. I give him two or three rounds. And then hear what I say. I give him two or three rounds of him having some slight success over Floyd. Why? Because Floyd's going to want to see what he does. If you watch past fights of Floyd, the older Floyd, you see he kind of gives away the first and second round. He likes to see the reaction. Same way Mikey Garcia did a lot of feints, Floyd does almost the same thing. He doesn't do anything that's special effects. He keeps it very boxing traditional, very standard, and he figures out his guy by watching his reaction of what he does first to see what Conor's going to do. So right after that, I kind of just see him just taking over. It's going to be a bore fest. And again, you're going to hear a lot of complaints that, oh, this is why boxing is this and this and this and that. And all the idiots that were trying to sound very intelligent about how this fight's going to go, well, they're just going to be idiots again. So that's my take. Floyd Mayweather by unanimous decision. He should get the stoppage, though. I mean, seriously, he should be able to stop this guy. The guy has no balance. He's going to try to switch and hit. You just don't do that. You're not Terrence Crawford. It works with Terrence Crawford because he's a boxer. He's a boxer puncher. He's been in the fight game and with gloves on his whole life, okay? Conor McGregor, you don't want to experiment with a seasoned veteran like Floyd Mayweather. You just don't want to do those things. But, of course, he's going to try. He's going to try to make it look fancy. He's going to try to get the crowd all revved up and everything. But then what's going to happen is it's all going to die out because Floyd should be able to get this stoppage because it's going to be there for the taking. I'll be very disappointed if he doesn't. And I think a lot of us will. But, like I said, I think a lot of us will. So be disappointed on Saturday night with Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather, okay? The fight that I am looking forward to on Saturday, of course, is Miguel Cotto and Kamagai. Japanese fighter, very tough, rough, is going to go in there, is going to kind of, you know, here's a guy that's going to actually look to make a fight happen between Miguel Cotto, okay? Now, the thing with Miguel Cotto being with Freddie Roach, you see his left hook kind of back, throwing some body shots, but I just don't see him trying to make this into an all-out war, okay? If anything, I see Miguel Cotto trying to box, and when it does get a little thick in there, he's going to thin it out by trying to box backwards, give himself room, walk around the slower Kamagai guy, pepper him with jabs, try to keep it a boxing match, okay? So he might let us down in that sense, but we got a real fight here in the sense that Kamagai is a big guy. He does come forward. He likes to mix it up. He likes to exchange leather. He's not shy of getting hit and bruised up. So I expect him to take a lot of leather to try to land his shots. So I expect some real good exchanges, but not to the extent where we're going to be standing up. You know, we might be disappointed with this fight as well. If it's because it all ends up with Miguel Cotto. How does he want to go out in this fight? Does he want to box a slower guy, a guy that he knows he can outbox? Or does he want to make a statement at 154 and try to stop Kamagai? I'm leaning with he's just going to want to box. I hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm the idiot on Saturday that ends up saying, damn, we got a hell of a fight. Because I want a hell of a fight on Saturday between Miguel Cotto and Kamagai. So there you go. That's my take, man. Hey, everybody, thanks for, again, I will be back. I will have my co-host, Gabriel Montoya, back here on Leaving the Ring. I just wanted to drop this short vid here because I've gotten a lot of folks emails. I'll answer in another video about my thoughts about Marquez, Bradley, and Klitschko, all the guys that have retired, okay, and about upcoming fights that we're hearing about here on Leaving the Ring. Again, thanks again. Don't forget to follow us and to donate to the Patreon that we have for Leaving the Ring, okay? You guys take care, man. Don't drink and drive because you will spill your beer.
These days, good sense is in short supply. Amid the fear-mongering and fake news, it can be hard to take a breath and tune in to what's real. But every week, The Economist provides clarity on the issues that matter to you. Get a free print copy of The Economist. Visit economist.com/free copy for a sensible, more considered view. Visit economist.com/free copy now. The Economist. Clear thinking in an uncertain world. New subscribers only. Terms and conditions apply.